Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Cheva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udiraya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 9, Chapter entitled Detachment from All That Is Material, Text Number 27. Jivaikato
Jivaikato
Mum
Mum
Apakashati
Apakashati
Kahi
Kahi
Karsha
Karsha
Shishno
Shishno
Anyatas
Anyatas
Twag
Twag
Udaram
Udaram
Shravanam
Shravanam
Kutaschit
Kutaschit
Prano
Prano
Anyatash
Anyatash
Chapaladrik
Chapaladrik
Kwa
Kaba
Cha
Cha
Kama Shaktir
Kama Shaktir
Avyaha
Avyaha
Satnya
Satnya
Iva Geha Patin
Iva Geha Patin
Lunanti
Lunanti
Jivaikato mum apakarshati kahi tarsha
Jivaikato mum apakarshati kahi tarsha
Shishnam yatas twagudaram shravanam kutaschit
Shishnam yatas twagudaram shravanam kutaschit
Granon Granon yatas chapaladri qua chakarma shaktir.
Granon yatas chapaladri qua chakarma shaktir.
Pavyasapatnya iva geha patin lunanti.
Pavyasapatnya iva geha patin lunanti.
Jivaikato mum apakarshati kahi tarsha
Jivaikato mum apakarshati kahi tarsha
Shishnon yatas twag udaran shravanam kutaschit
Shishnon yatas shravanam kutaschit
Granon yatas chapaladrik vacha Karma Shaktir
Narno Nyastapadrikya
Karma Shaktir Pavyasapatnya Iva Geha Patim Lunanti
Pavyasapatnya Iva Geha Patim Lunanti
Jiva
Jiva
The tongue
The tongue
Ekata
Ekata
On one side
On one side
Amum.
Amum,
the body or the, the body or the conditioned soul who identifies with the body.
The body or the conditioned soul who identifies with the body.
Apakarshati.
Apakarshati.
Drags away.
Drags away.
Kahi.
Kahi.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Tarsha.
Tarsha.
Thirst.
Thirst.
Shishna.
Shishna.
The genitals.
The genitals.
Anyata.
Anyata.
On another side.
On another side.
Twak.
Twak.
The sense of touch.
The sense of touch.
Udaram.
Udaram.
The belly.
The belly.
Shravanam.
Shravanam.
The ears.
The ears.
Kutaschit.
Kutaschit.
From somewhere else.
From somewhere else.
Grana.
Grana.
The sense of smell.
The sense of smell.
Anyata.
Anyata.
From another side.
From another side.
Japaladrik.
Japaladrik.
The fickle eyes.
The fickle eyes.
Kwacha.
Kwacha.
Somewhere else.
Somewhere else.
Kama Shakti.
Kama Shakti.
The other active organs and limbs of the body.
The other active organs and limbs of the body.
Arya.
Arya.
Many.
Many.
Sapatnya.
Sapatnya.
Co-wives.
Co-wives.
Hiva.
Hiva.
Life.
Life.
Geha Patim.
Geha Patim.
The head of the household.
The head of the household.
Lunanti.
Lunanti.
Pull in many directions.
Pull in many directions.
Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada.
Okay.
A man who has many wives is constantly harassed by them. He is responsible for their maintenance, and thus all the ladies can constantly pull him in different directions, each struggling for her self-interest. Similarly, the material senses harass the conditioned soul, pulling him in many different directions at once. On one side, the tongue is pulling him to arrange tasty food. Then thirst drags him to get a suitable drink. Simultaneously, the sex organs clamor for satisfaction, and the sense of touch demands soft, sensuous objects. The belly harasses him until he is filled. The ears demand to hear pleasing sounds. The sense of smell hankers for pleasant aromas, and the fickle eyes clamor for pleasing sights. Thus the senses, organs, and limbs, all desiring satisfaction, pull the living entity in many directions. Good point. Srila Bishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that after understanding this verse, one should merely offer without attachment the bare necessities to the guru of one's body. One should keep one's body fit and working in the simplest possible way. And that is the sum and substance of service to this so-called guru. If one desires to faithfully serve the body, one should consider that the body pulls the consciousness of the conditioned soul in many ways at once. And thus, for the servant of the body, there is no possibility of understanding God or even of becoming peaceful. Omagyan timananda syak yananjana shalakaya chakshun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manovishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam adati swadantikam vanchakam kutubhyascha kripa sindhuva evacha Petitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Vedanta Vishwasadi Gaura Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the analogy is given of someone who has many co-wives. In Vedic culture, then, it was permissible for the higher classes to have more than one wife, like that. Because, Prabhupada explained that generally, there are more women on the planet than there are men. Prabhupada says generally, most of the children born are girls, higher percentage. I don't know what the percentage is. We have 6 billion humans at this point in time. I'm not sure what the percentage is, the ratio. I think women outnumber men. But previously Prabhupada says that women, generally, they would outnumber men. There would be more women than men on the planet. So, Vedic culture means that it is permissible for the higher classes, means brahmanas, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, to have more than one wife in order to give protection to the women. Because if there's more women than men, then they cannot all get married. And so therefore, the higher class is allowed to have more than one wife in order to... that. Just like Krishna's father, Vasudeva, how many wives did he have?
Eight.
8, like that. I think it's more like 13 or something. I think it might be 17 or something. So it was common, not uncommon. Even you read the Bhagavatam, it says Chitraketu Maharaj. How many wives did he have? I can't remember, it says something like 1 million. Our religion, our philosophy cannot be matched. We always turn out to be superior. The Bhagavatam is always superior to everything else on the planet. Like that. You won't read in other scriptures or other places in the world of people having 1 million wives. Krishna has 16,108 wives. Like that. So this was the system. System was you can have more than one wife. When Prabhupada first came to America in 1965, I think it was around about 1967 or so, then Prabhupada actually said to the devotees, he said, maybe the men in this country can marry more than one wife. He actually said in the beginning. And then the devotees pointed out to Prabhupada, they said, it's not legal in this country, in America, in the Western countries. It's not legal. So Prabhupada said, then we cannot do it. Because if this one begins to organise things which are not being done, then obviously there'll be conflict like that. You know, if we start marrying more than one wife to one man, and then you know, in Australia that's not the law, then suddenly problems will arise. In some countries they still do it. In the Middle East they do it. Still, even now, Saudi Arabia, Muslim countries, they still do it. And Iran, Iraq, all those places, still prevalent. So it's there. It's part of the Vedic culture. It's part of human civilization. In Kali Yuga, we do not do it because in Kali Yuga, then problems will arise like that. So anyone who is married knows that to have one wife or one husband is a problem. You don't need to. Or three, or ten. Just one is enough in Kali Yuga. And you get enough problems just by having one. One husband, one wife, that is enough to keep you occupied. And mentally disturbed a lot of the time. Because that is the nature of the material world. Srila Prabhupada says, man is good, woman is good, but together they are bad. That is the nature of the material energy. Man is good, woman is good, but you put them together automatically. You know, you see there are always problems. It's funny, sometimes you're driving in your car and you're driving down the road and you can see a husband and wife, you know, pushing the pram and they're having an argument. Like that, you can see, even though you can't hear it or anything, but you can just see by their body language and so forth that they're not happy. Like that, it's like this a lot of the time, because that's the nature of the material energy. In the material energy, everyone has Purusha Bhav. Purusha Bhav means I want to be the enjoyer, but we are not the enjoyer. The enjoyer is the Adi Purush, the Maha Purush. The Mahapurush is Krishna. Govindam Adi Purusha Tamaham Bhajami. Krishna is the Purusha. But when we come to the material world, we become covered by Ahankara. And part of the Ahankara, or the false ego, is that we think we are Purusha. Purusha means I am the master. So when you get married, then you have two Purushas. Then the wife thinks that the husband is meant for my enjoyment. And the husband thinks the wife is meant for my enjoyment. And then you have conflict. Like that. So you can imagine if you had 10 wives. Just imagine. Right? They're all pulling you in different directions simultaneously. Yeah, come here, come here. Hey, you do this, you do that. Please, now. Like that. Constantly, constantly. Like that. Where is the peace? Srila Prabhupada said that Brahmachari life or Brahmacharini life is best. Right? Better than sannyas. Right? Because when you're a sannyasi, you have so much social pressure. Because it describes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that even if there is one black dot on a piece of white cloth, it stands out very noticeably. So if a sannyasi does even anything just slightly small, even if there's any slight detection of some fault or some discrepancy, immediately one says, oh, look. So there's so much pressure in the sannyasa ashram, so much social pressure. Because people are always looking at you, always. You know, as soon as the Maharaj walks in the room, one says, like, you know, he's constantly under scrutiny. Like, there's a lot of pressure. So Prabhupada says, Brahmachari life is best. Because it is peaceful. In Brahmachari life, Brahmacharini life, you have three bags. That is all you have. Japa bag, book bag, and sleeping bag. Brahmachari life, Brahmacharini life, bus. That's all you have. Chant your japa, distribute some books, take rest. That is your life. Serve the guru. That is your life. So it is best. What is better? Nothing is better. I know I was a brahmachari for 8 years, lived here in this ashram for most of that time. Nothing is better. Nothing matches. Because complete freedom to simply serve guru and Krishna, dedicate your consciousness. It is not like that as a grihastha. As a grihastha, like I said, you only have one wife or one husband, but then automatically they're pulling you all the time. So your interest or your time and your energy is divided. Whereas when you are a brahmachari, or brahmacharini, there is undivided time. Simply you serve guru and Krishna. I remember one time my spiritual master, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who we celebrated his Vyasa Puja yesterday, then he was walking back to the temple. We went on a morning walk with him, many devotees, 30, 40 devotees or something, and we went for a walk and were coming back to the temple. And one of the brahmacharinis said to him, we're trying to get married, but not so many husbands around, so it's difficult like that. He said, so then you just wait and Krishna will make some arrangement for you. And he said, and if no suitable husband comes, then Krishna will marry you. Because this is brahmachari life, this is brahmacharini life. You are married to Guru and Krishna. Your entire life is dedicated to the service of Guru and Krishna. And if you're advanced in Krishna consciousness, then you do not need a wife. You do not need a husband. Generally, because we have so much, so covered by ignorance, avidya, that we generally identify with the body very deeply. So it's very hard for most conditioned souls in this day and age to remain brahmachari or brahmacharini. Very difficult. Because so much identification is hard to fully break away from that. But actually, if you can fully dedicate yourself to just serving Guru and Krishna, this is superior. Prabhupada says, we need marriage as much as we need a material body. How much do you need a material body? You don't need a material body. Why do you have a material body? Because you want to enjoy separately from Krishna. Because you're trying to enjoy separately from Krishna, Krishna says, here you go, here is a material body to facilitate your desire to enjoy separately from me. You don't need it. We don't need this body, but we get this body because we're trying to enjoy separately from Krishna. But one who is Prabhupada says that we need marriage as much as we need a material body, which means that we only get married, right? We only feel that we need a husband or a wife because we think we are the material body. As long as you identify with these false upadis or these false bodily designations, then you think, oh, I need a wife. I need a husband. Right? Why do you need a wife? Why do you need a husband? You're the soul. You're the jiva. You're the atma. Why do you need? Because you are thinking you are something you are not. That is Maya. So therefore, aham mameti. I am a man, I am a woman, therefore I need a husband, I need a wife. That is our false designation. That is our false misconception in this material world. So therefore Krishna says, Chaturvanyam Maya Srishta Gunakara Vibhagashaha. Then, okay, if you identify falsely, then I'll give you Vanasri. At least purify yourself, at least regulate yourself. Okay, if you want to get married, but follow regulations. Just like some of us are grihastas, I'm a grihasta. So we follow Vanasra. Okay, some material desire is there, to live with the opposite sex. We're not transcendental, or we've not transcended that desire fully. So therefore, you take grihasta ashram. It is ashram, it is ashraya, place of shelter. Right? Because when it is grihasta ashram, means the main thing is not the marriage, the main thing is service to Guru and Krishna. Same as when you're a brahmachari or brahmacharini. Right? Then you get married and you continue with that mood of dedicating yourself fully to service to Guru and Krishna. And the marriage is the secondary principle. It's not the grihasta becomes the griha becomes the main thing. That is griha medhi light. Right? And when you get married, if you get married, then you have to be very careful not to let the griha become the main thing. It's not the main thing. Right? It is a secondary thing. It's just something which Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it is like a safety net. Just like if you're walking on a tightrope. You know, if you see it in the circus, sometimes they walk on the rope up on the roof. They walk very, balancing. And they have a net underneath. Because sometimes the guy falls off. So the net is there. Okay. So we try to be transcendental, we try to fully absorb ourselves in service to Guru and Krishna, but sometimes we may fall, so then we have grihastha ashram. Okay, then you can have association with the opposite sex, if you need. If you cannot fully focus, if you cannot be fully transcendental, or fully on the spiritual platform, like that. So Krishna permits this, he gives this, like that. So, one who is married and has many wives, he will always be pulled by the different responsibilities of these different wives. So Rupa Goswami mentions this, and this, the Bhagavatam mentions this here. This is called vegan. Vegan means urge, like that, urges, like that. So when we have this deha, or this body, we are surrounded by these urges continuously. Vacho vegam. Manasa krota vegam. Next. Jiva vegam. Udarapasta vegam. Etam vegam. Yo vishaheta dira. Savam apimam pritivim sashishyat. So Rupa Goswami says these urges are constantly pulling us. Constantly. So it's like having many wives. Right? Constantly. Like that. First is Vacho. Vacha means speech. Big urge. As soon as people sit down, the urge to speak is there. But in Krishna consciousness, we do not speak unless we are speaking something which has relevance. Something that will actually help to raise our consciousness towards Krishna. Otherwise, don't speak. You see that people sit down and they just speak so much nonsense. What does Rupa Goswami call nonsense speak? Speech? Prajalpa. Prajalpa. Prajalpa means useless, idle gossip. Useless. Like that. And what is the example given in the Nectar of Instruction, the Upadeshamrita, Prabhupada gives? Just like a frog which is croaking. As soon as we begin to speak, we think, oh, my voice sounds very good. Everyone is listening to me. I have so much to say. Just like the other day, we were at some friend's house, and one person was speaking, and no one was really listening. But this person just liked to speak. So my wife said afterwards, we weren't really even listening. It's just that people just like to speak, just to hear their own voice. Right? Oh, I am a very erudite scholar. Oh, my opinion is so important, and I have so much to say. Right? And then I cannot control the sense of speaking, and then speaking. But just like a frog, the frog also thinks he's speaking very nicely, but he's just calling, get closer. So if you're using your speech simply to, simply in materialistic sound vibration, all you're doing is shortening your life. You're just bringing death closer. Come, closer, come, I'm here, come and devour me. So a snake comes, here's the frog speaking, and the snake comes and takes. Like that. So that is materialistic speech. But for a devotee, we can speak as much as we like as long as that speech is liberating. Yeah. Generally, when neophyte devotees come together, what happens? Right? They just speak prajapati. Right? And what happens quite often is we begin to criticize other devotees. We come together and because we are not controlling our tongue, our sense of speech, we just begin to criticize other devotees. Oh, what about that devotee? And what about this devotee? Right? And then we'd say all these things which we do not need to say, right? And it simply deteriorates our consciousness and contaminates and pollutes our consciousness. Whereas when devotees come together, you have an opportunity when you come together with devotees to elevate your consciousness. Right? If you control your speech and speak about things which are related to Krishna. So this is how to use our speech. Speech can be purified. It can elevate us or it can degrade us. Vacho vega. Manasa. Manasa means the mind. Right? The desires of the mind. Right? The mind, as Prabhupada explains, the mind has three functions. Right? What are the three functions? Thinking, feeling, willing. That's what the mind, that's how the mind operates. Right? The mind begins to think. Like that. What does the mind think about? Sense gratification. All day long. Just thinks all the time. Right? So this is the mind. Very hard to purify the mind. Very hard to control the mind. But if you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, just like last week or the week before in our Bhakti Vaibhav class, we were analyzing six features of japa meditation. Right? And Sanatana Goswami mentions this in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. On the board in the theatre, we have the six written up like that. So if you want to see, you can go and see. So, the first feature of successful japa meditation is mind control. You must learn to control your mind. Right? You must bring the mind under control. Right? So the mind must learn to be controlled, because the mind thinks of so many things which are irrelevant. Right? Material desires, it contemplates sense gratification. So then from thinking, the mind thinks, and then from thinking comes feeling. Right? I'm thinking about sense gratification, and then the mind begins to ponder, and it feels what it is like. Actually, we enjoy in the mind. Right? Even when we are enjoying something with the senses, it is actually the mind which enjoys. Right? The mind enjoys through the senses. Yeah? So we are enjoying on the mental platform. So in our mind, when we begin to think of something, then we begin to feel, oh, what is it like? I used to do that. I used to have this material pleasure. And then you contemplate that sense gratification. Krishna speaks about this in the Bhagavad Gita, this contemplation of the material senses. Jayato vishayan pumsam sangas teshu bhajayate. Samgat sanjayate, kama, kama proto vijayate. Right? Sangat sanjayate karma. What does karma mean? Lust, or desire. Comes from sangha. Sangha means association. In other words, jayato. Jayato means meditation. Meditating on sense gratification. Right? So, jayato vishaya. Meditating on sense gratification. What happens? From that association in the mind with sense gratification, lust, sangas, sanjayate, karma. Right? Then desire comes. Right? So this is what the mind does. Right? So this is called thinking, feeling, and then when you're feeling, then willing. Now I must have it. Right? I've been meditating on it, meditating on it, meditating on it. Now I must have it. And if I cannot have it, then karma, krodho vijayate. Krodha will come. If I cannot have it, then I'll become angry, frustrated. And you see, people are so, in this day and age, people are so frustrated. Why? Because they cannot have what is going on in their mind. So therefore, as devotees, we must learn to control the mind, the urges of the mind. Right? Because if we allow our mind to go from thinking, because all of us think of sense gratification, right? Because we're contaminated, we're conditioned. So during the day we're doing our service and then something comes into our mind from some previous samskara or impression, since we've been in the material world. Some desire for sense gratification comes into the mind. But a devotee, you cannot meditate on it. You cannot contemplate it. Right? Because if you contemplate it, if you meditate on it, then it goes from thinking to feeling. And when it becomes feeling, it becomes much more difficult to deal with. Thinking is not as bad, because when thinking is there, if you kick it out, right? Just like some thief comes into the house, then you grab a stick, a danda, and say, hey, chore, get out. Like that. So some thief, some material desire comes to the mind and say, hey, get out. But if we contemplate and it goes to feeling, then it becomes very difficult. From that point, it becomes very difficult to go back. Right? And material people, they don't go back, they go forward. Then it goes from feeling to willing. Right? And then it becomes very difficult. If you get to that stage, then you're really in trouble. So therefore, you have to learn to control the mind. And as we said in the previous class, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says you deal with the mind with a danda, with a stick. Right? Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj, he says that you must beat the mind 100 times in the morning and 100 times in the evening. So it means you must beat your mind. Right? If the desire for sense gratification comes to the mind, you must kick it out. Krishna says in the Gita that in order to overcome these lower desires or these lower tastes, then you must develop param drishtva nivatate. Nivatate means you can only give up something lower if you get param drishtva, or a superior satisfaction, a superior pleasure. So, as devotees, where do we get our superior pleasure from? From service to Guru and Krishna. Right? From the service to our spiritual master, to the service to Krishna, we get a superior taste. Srila Prabhupada says that the brahmacharis and the brahmacharinis, they should be so tired at the end of the day because they've been doing so much service for Krishna that as soon as their head touches the pillow, they fall asleep. Because you've done so much service all day. That's brahmachari life. That's brahmacharini life. Right? That should be devotional life. Right? As soon as your head touches the pillow, oh. And then wake up in the morning, serve Krishna all day. Serve Guru all day. So, this is called samadhi. Samadhi means fixed meditation. Then you should be so fixed in your service to Guru and to Krishna, there is no time for Maya to creep in. Maya only creeps in when we give her an opportunity. So we should not give Maya any opportunity to creep in. you know, even on the mental platform. And this requires practice and advancement of Krishna consciousness. But this should be our aspiration, you know, that Maya does not even have time to enter into our thoughts, because we are so absorbed in service to Guru and to Krishna. Yavasa yapnika buddhi ekeha kuru nandana. Right? Just fixed in service to Guru and Krishna. And because of that, there is no time to mind to enter. So vacho vegam manasa krodha vegam. To deal with the urge of anger. Anger is kamanuj. Kamanuj means the follower of desire. Just like we have Ramanuj. Ramanuj means Lakshman. Lakshman is the follower of Ramachandra. Wherever Ramachandra goes, Lakshman is behind, always. So this is Ramanuj. So anger is Kamanuj. Wherever you have desire or lust, anger will follow very soon. So how do we conquer our anger? The force of anger. By conquering our material desires. And how do we conquer our material desires? We have to stop desiring selfishly for ourselves and to exchange those desires for spiritual desires. Desires to please Guru and Krishna. And this is how we become purified in our desires. And then you conquer anger. Prabhupada explains, anger can be used for one purpose. When can we become angry? Yeah, when the devotees of Krishna are being attacked, then we can become angry. Just like Arjuna was angry. Hanuman was angry. So you can use anger like that. Otherwise, keep it in your pocket. Do not bring it out. Like that. So, vacho vega, manasa, krodha, vega. Jiva vega. What does jiva mean?
The tongue.
Right? Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says every morning before we take prasadam we sing Sharida Vijaya Jadendriya Teka Jiva Vile Vishaya Sagare. This prayer by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that the tongue is the most voracious of all the senses. If you can control the tongue, you can control the other senses. If you cannot control your tongue, you cannot control the other senses. So you have to learn to control your tongue. In the beginning, right, that means you only eat Krishna prasad. Prabhupada says for the first 6 months, you can eat so much prasad that you waddle like a duck. I did this one for 9 months. When I first joined, I got to see, because I heard this when I first joined, and then I thought, oh, good. So we can eat so much, we can waddle like a duck. So I did that. I ate so much, so I was waddling like a duck for 6 months, and then I got to 6 months, and I thought, I can't renounce this yet. So I went to 9 months. And then after that, then I thought, I didn't think, I just. Naturally it happens. You become purified. So in the beginning, Prabhupada said, you only take prasad. And then you learn to control your senses. Because that is an austerity, to only take Krishna's prasad. Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Instruction, in the Upadishamrita, that when we go to Vrindavan and places like that, then there are so many nice sweets in the shops. So then you think, oh, I can eat this sweet, I can eat that sweet, I can eat that sweet. Srila Prabhupada says that the source of all disease is eating outside the temple. Srila Prabhupada says that you will get sick if you eat outside of the temple. Because the offering is not pure. Now, you're eating things which are cooked by non-devotees, and non-devotees have all sorts of desires in their consciousness. And when the flame is lit, when you light a flame, right, your consciousness enters through the flame into the preparation. And if someone takes that preparation, and if you have lusty consciousness, then that person who eats that offering will also become lusty. So therefore it is most important that the people or the devotees who cook in the temple, their consciousness must be pure. Right? It is so important to our devotional communities, because if the devotees who are cooking for the other devotees or for the deities, and then the prasadam is offered to the other devotees, if their consciousness is lusty, and if it has material desires, it will affect everyone else's consciousness. Therefore, it is most important that whoever cooks for the devotees, they must be in good consciousness. So in the beginning, this is how we purify ourselves. Right? We control the tongue by only taking prasad. Now, after time, first 6 months, Prabhupada says, waddle like a duck, no problem. Eat whatever you want, whenever you want. But Mahaprabhu says, in the Anchalila, and when he's teaching Raghunath Das Goswami, he says that you must, as you advance in Krishna consciousness, you have to learn to only eat simple prasadam. Right? Not opulent prasadam. Not too much ghee, not too much sugar, not too much opulent prasad. Simple prasad. Right? Actually, when Prabhupada began ISKCON, the diet which Prabhupada developed for ISKCON, right, was for lunch, right, devotees can take rice, dal, sabjis, chapati, bas. Right? So that is our staple diet, simple prasad. Now in ISKCON, you know, we practically just eat, you know, curd and deep fried and sweet, you know, and all these things is not good for your health on a daily basis. It will deteriorate your longevity. You will get sick. You'll develop health problems in your older age. So therefore you should eat simple prasad. This is controlling the tongue. If you can control the tongue, right, so easy, much easier to control all the other senses. So one must control the tongue by eating simple prasad and not opulent prasad. Otherwise you'll get so many diseases, and then you have to follow strict diets anyway. You're forced to follow some strict diet. So better you do it voluntarily. Right. And then learn to control the tongue, and then the mind becomes so much more peaceful. You see, people who have controlled their tongue, their minds are peaceful. People who have not controlled their tongue, their minds are not peaceful, always agitated. So vacho vega, manasa krodha vega, jiva vega, udaro upasta, udara. Udara means damuda. One of Krishna's names is Damoda. Udara. Udara means the belly. Right? Do not feel the belly too much. Right? Srila Prabhupada says that we should eat to the belly is 50% full of food, right? 25% full of water, and 25% full of air. That is Ayurveda. That means digestion will be successful. Because if it's 98% food, then how are you going to digest? Right? Because the digestion needs some air, and it needs some space to digest, and it needs some water. Prabhupada says that when you take the sadhu, you can sip water, a little bit of water while you're eating. Not too much. Because if you take too much water while you're eating, it will dilute the digestive juices, and then you will not have strong digestion. After you eat, you should not drink anything for 2 hours. Right? Because if you drink anything straight after you eat, it will just, it's like putting a water on the fire, and then everything just becomes, stops like that. So Ayurveda says that 1 hour before you eat, you should drink some water. 1 hour before, because that will build the fire. And then when you take prasad, then you take prasad and you sip a little water while you're taking. So that in your stomach, udara means it is like a dough. So then you have some water, you have some solid, like that, mixes all up, stomach mixes it up. Your stomach is a muscle, it's an organ. they go like that. It's like blends everything like that. So you give some air, some water, some like that, and then everything gets digested nicely. So if you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, you have to control the udara, which means you have to learn to control how much you eat, like that. And then udara upasta. Upasta means the genitals. Because if you eat too much, if you cannot control the tongue, because as we said, the tongue is the most necessary to control. If you cannot control the tongue, you will not control the belly. If the belly is too full, it presses down on the genitals and creates sexual agitation. And the mind becomes disturbed by sex desire, by lust. So therefore, Rupa Goswami says that you have to learn to control all of these urges. If you do not control these urges, you cannot advance nicely in Krishna consciousness. So these urges must be brought under control. So there is a process to bring all these things under control. The most important process is to dedicate all of your activities and your desires to the service of Guru and Krishna. But there are mechanical things we can do simultaneously. Because the body, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the body is a yantra. Yantra means it is a machine. So it means there's certain things that you do with the body. Like you don't overeat. You don't oversleep. Right? When it's winter, you stay warm. We wear lots of clothing. Right? You be practical. Right? When it's summer, you don't wear so much clothing. So you don't get sick. You have to keep the yantra or the body healthy. Right? Because if you don't keep the body healthy, right, then you cannot serve Krishna. Right? Dhananjaya Prabhu, who was a very early disciple of Srila Prabhupada, he lives in Vrindavan now, he said one time, when he was talking to us about Prabhupada, he said that Prabhupada said, health first, then Krishna consciousness. Right? Meaning that, not that health is more important than Krishna consciousness, but if you are not healthy, how will you practice Krishna consciousness? How can you be Krishna conscious if you are always disturbed by the body and the mind? Right? If the body and the mind are not peaceful, how will you meditate on Krishna? Right? Very difficult. So therefore the body must be looked after. You must eat properly, exercise properly, right? Have enough recreation, relaxation time. Like all those things must be there in order to keep a healthy body and a healthy mind. Then you can more easily serve Krishna. And just like we had the retreat last week at the farm with Burujan Guru and Jagatri, but after the retreat I became sick. Because so many devotees had flus and colds, so somehow, usually I don't get sick very often, but I got sick. So for the last week I've been sick, so it's harder to serve Krishna. I have things I want to do for the service of Guru and Krishna, but when the body is sick, it is difficult. Srila Prabhupada says that sickness and sleep are maya. Sickness and sleep are maya trying to stop your service. This is how maya stops your service. Oh, I need to sleep another 2 hours. Right? I need to do this, and then you get sick. Right? So devotees, you should not let yourself get sick. Look after your body. It is your seva to your guru to look after your body. It is your seva to your guru not to sleep too much. Right? Keep your body and your mind healthy so that you can serve Krishna. That is your responsibility. It is your service to your guru. So if we do all these things, then we can advance nicely in Krishna consciousness. If we don't do these things, then it will be very difficult to advance. So it says here that the urges are always pushing us. So as devotees, we must learn to control these urges. Because by controlling these urges, then we can fully dedicate ourselves to the service of Guru and Krishna. Otherwise, as the Bhagavatam says, it's like having 10 wives. You have 10 wives? Always, come here, come here, come here, come here. How can you concentrate on one thing? Right? Or if you have 10 kids, right? Come here, come here. How can you concentrate on one thing? So how can you concentrate on your service to Guru and Krishna if your senses and your mind are always pulling you in every direction? So therefore, senses must be controlled, mind must be controlled. Therefore, Rupa Goswami says, in the beginning, control your body, control your senses, control your mind. Then I will give you further instructions. And then in those 11 verses in the Upadesamrita, he takes us all the way to the highest level of consciousness that is attained by the soul, by the jiva. But in the beginning, spiritual life begins by controlling the mind. And Prabhupada says in the introduction of the Nectar of Instruction, he says, this is living in the mode of goodness. Because if you do not live in the mode of goodness, you cannot advance in Krishna consciousness. Passion and ignorance, we will always be held back in our devotional service if we're too much in passion and too much in ignorance. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
What is the recreation of the devotee?
What's that?
You mentioned there should be some recreation also.
So yeah.
For a devotee, what's the recreation?
Prabhupada said one time, because he was speaking to the reporters, and Prabhupada said, our whole life is recreation. Because what do? Just like when you're a brahmachari, brahmacharini. I remember when I was living there as brahmachari. Then, whole life is recreation. Come to the temple, morning program, dance, sing, listen to Bhagavatam, take prasad, go and distribute books, and do seva for Krishna. It's practically recreation the whole time. But, while I was a brahmachari, I used to always have one day off because I was a sankirtan devotee. So 5-6 days a week, we were just distributing books and absorbed in sankirtan. So then, on Sunday, we would relax. Relax means we would, spend more time studying Prabhupada's books, have some time off, like that. And then we'd go and preach at the Sunday feast, like that. So that was our relaxed day, like that. Then it is also mentioned that for Vaishnavas, there are three recreational activities which are permissible. Swimming, gardening, and wrestling. So these are three Vaishnava recreational sports. So sometimes devotees like to work in the garden for Krishna. It is relaxing. Or we go swimming, just like we go to Puri, or we go to the Ganga. When we're like that, or here we have the Yarra. I don't think you swim there, but sometimes you maybe go for a swim at the beach like that. Nice. And then relax, swimming. Or you go to the pool or whatever. And wrestling. Wrestling means sometimes, we used to have, when I was young brahmachari, when I first joined, we used to have wrestling. And sometimes we just grab each other and just wrestle around. Like that. So it means these Vaishnava sports. Like that. Just enjoying on a like that. Yeah, sometimes. Or sometimes we go to the retreats, and then we play some soccer or we play some like that. So it means that to have some recreation with the devotees, it's nice. Play some table tennis or like that. But it's not that we get too serious. We don't start, like joining the team. joining the soccer team or joining the cricket team, and then Prabhu, can you please come and watch the Pots this Saturday? No, I have to play cricket. It's not that serious. We're going to take that seriously. It's just like some time off. It's like these days, like the football players in Australia, we have Australia Rules Football. So some of these guys get paid a few $100,000 a year. Right, to run around the field, with a leather ball, and kick it through two big sticks. A couple of $100,000 a year to kick a ball between a couple of sticks. That's taking it too seriously. Football is something you just do for half an hour on the weekend just to have some relaxation. You don't turn it into a religion. In England, soccer is a religion. They are fanatical, about, and all around the world, in Australia we have football. So they're fanatical. So it should not become like that. Does that answer? Okay. Any other question, comment? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.